well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking about what's going on in Wisconsin, both in our interview today as well as our recidivist report a little bit later on in the program. You know, Governor Tony Evers announcing an Office of Violence Prevention this week, and also calling on Republicans to get behind his so far unspecified gun safety package that I guess will be unveiled in the next couple of days. When I saw what Governor Evers was doing, first person I thought about was Chuck Lovelace. You know, we spoke with Chuck. He has a gun shop in northern Wisconsin. Talked to him, I guess, for the first time a few months ago. John Diedrich from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, you know, had that really great series Behind the Gun that focused on what gun owners and Second Amendment advocates are doing to reduce. Well, first, he took a look at reducing suicide, gun-related suicides. Most recently, he took a look at accidental or negligent shootings in the state of Wisconsin. But Chuck has been a part of the Wisconsin Gunshot Project really since its inception. This is much like Hold My Guns, a voluntary storage initiative. So if you are a gun owner and you feel the need to temporarily remove firearms from your home, whether there's, you know, a person in crisis in your home, whether you're going out of town for a couple of weeks, whatever, they don't ask why. They just provide a safe place for you to temporarily store your firearms, and you can get them back whenever you want. I think this is so much better than extreme risk protection orders, than red flag laws, than, you know, these sort of heavy-handed state mandated programs. So when I heard that Governor Evers had launched this Office of Violence Prevention, I was curious if Chuck and maybe the Wisconsin Gunshot Project was going to be a part of this office. So I reached out. As it turns out, I'm going to let Chuck fill you in here on the details, but it was a fascinating conversation. And, you know, I will also say that in addition to the impetus of Governor Evers' announcement, you know, I did want to talk about voluntary storage in light of what me and my family have been going through over the past couple of weeks. Now, I will say, and I told Chuck, I have not felt the need to remove firearms from my home after my wife died, but it is something that I'm very cognizant of. And I have had these conversations so that if I do feel like there is a need, either because I am not in a good place, or maybe my kids who still live at home are not in good places, I have had these conversations with friends, and I know that there are places where I can have my firearms temporarily stored. Not at gun shops, because we don't really have anything like that in Virginia. But I do have a friend network who I know would support me if needed. And I think, again, that these conversations are so crucial. We cannot be afraid to have these conversations because, again, it's ultimately about saving the lives of the people that we love and we care about. And this is something that I know is very near and dear to Chuck's heart. It's near and dear to my own. And again, I thought we had a great conversation, some really surprising information coming from Chuck when it comes to the approach that Governor Evers and Wisconsin Democrats have taken over the past few years. So take a look and a listen. Chuck, thanks so much for coming back on the show, sir. It's so good to see you again.
You too as well. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. And yeah, you were the first person I thought of when I saw this story about Governor Evers there announcing the Office of Violence Prevention, as well as using this as an opportunity to say, oh, yeah, we've got this, you know, gun safety package that is coming. And, you know, I want to start, Chuck, with this whole idea of an Office of Violence Prevention, right? I think there are some programs out there, some community violence intervention programs that are effective, that are not about infringing on people's rights. And maybe, you know, do deserve some support. But I think there's also a lot of gun control activism that gets lumped into this idea of, you know, violence prevention. So I'm curious, you know, you've been involved in the Wisconsin Gunshot Project pretty much since the beginning, right?
Yep. Since I was the first shop in the state to have it and incorporate it. And then from there, we actually designed and built the parameters for the safe storage initiative as well, where not just educating retailers and their employees on the signs of somebody who may be in a potential crisis time, but also offering a place for them to come that's a neutral third party, not necessarily law enforcement, not necessarily forcing their hand, but saying, we don't care why you need to store them, but mm-hmm. we're willing to store them for you until you're in a place where you can, you know, better be involved with them.
So to me, I mean, it sounds like that is one of those things that I would have no issue with that receiving state funding or grants. And Governor Evers says, we got $10 million in federal funds we're putting towards this office. Got to make that available automatically. What has the state of Wisconsin's reaction been or involvement been with the Wisconsin Gunshot Project? Have they been supportive? Have they offered grants? Have you been able to work with the state on these initiatives in the past?
So it's a mixed batch when we're dealing with this.
Okay.
Because obviously when you're there and standing in front of the policymakers, they're all supportive about this concept.
Sure.
And, you know, Senator Jesse James is an amazing state senator. He was a state representative when I started working with him. And he's pushed forward legislation multiple times to be able to set up grants for gun shops to be able to, you know, apply for a grant to get a safe to do safe storage. And every single time it's gone through, you know, it'll get approved at one level and it'll get, you know, knocked down at the next level. And what I found, and the part that's very frustrating for me and that I've had to really temper my response to over the years now, what I found is that they're all about, let's make this visible in the public eye. But then when it's time for it to pass and it fails, nobody talks about it until the next year when they can push something forward.
Right.
And I've spoken in front of both the state Senate and Assembly, and I've spoken at special town hall meetings in regards to these programs because I think they're important. You know, people don't realize a lot of the small gun shops that are around the country, we're all privately owned. You know, we don't have the backing of your Cabela's, your Gander Mountain, your big name stores. So when we're, you know, bringing in guns, yes, our guns are a little more expensive usually because we have to make a little more profit and we don't get the bulk buying discount that the big box stores get. But on the flip side, when you've got a problem with that gun, you come back to us and we help you fix it or resolve it. You don't get that kind of service always at those big stores.
Yeah.
And so when we talk about, okay, we're going to offer this storage program, but we want you to have it a fire resistant or fireproof safe. And when you're offering it, you know, being able to tell people we keep them securely stored in this safe so that even though we're insured for it, if something were to happen, we've got fire prevention around them. So that's an $800 all the way up to, you know, $2,000 investment for these small shops to make.
Right.
And for some small shops, a $2,000 investment is 50% of their monthly profit.
Yeah.
And people don't realize that.
So, you know, one of the things that I found interesting about Governor Evers' press conference is that he used this, I think, to play politics with you. I'll be really honest. You know, he talked about this new Office of Violence Prevention, but he also, and I'm looking here, this is from the Daily Cardinal. Evers also said he'll be proposing a sweeping package aimed at reducing gun violence and implementing more public safety measures in the coming weeks. And, you know, again, basically called on Republicans to, you know, get on board with these gun control measures. And while he's doing all of this, again, according to the Daily Cardinal, he was Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from Madison, Madison Police Chief Sean Barnes, and, quote, violence prevention advocates joined Evers and applauded the governor's efforts to address increased violence in the state. So, you know, again, I think he's making this very, I think he's making this more political than it needs to be. And I guess my question is, did the governor's office reach out to you and ask if you wanted to be a part of this event? You know, again, if I'm just trying to get a sense of whether or not Governor Evers thinks about things like voluntary safe storage as a violence prevention measure. Or is there a block, you think, in his mind and in the mind of some of these lawmakers that, OK, well, if it's coming from pro-Second Amendment people, if it's coming from gun owners, well, why would we want to pay any attention to that? It must not be. it must not be valid, right? That's not what we're looking for.
Well, you know, it is a politics game, let's be honest. You know, when they push forward these measures and they title them as public safety measures,
mm-hmm.
that right there tells me that they don't want to actually put what it is. And you can go through and check all of the polls, and they're going to, a majority of the time, you know, Marquette Law did a poll and said that 80% of respondents, you know, favored increased measures for obtaining a firearm. And well, 80% of the people they polled, was that 80% of their students? Was that, you know, where are they getting this poll from?
Right.
I've noticed since moving from the Dane County area all the way north to Price County, where, you know, I'm literally 45 minutes south of Lake Superior. I'm pretty close to about as far north as you're going to get in Wisconsin. And it's a completely different environment here. It's a completely up here, especially in the hunting environments. You know, those firearms are a specific tool. There are people who collect, yes, but there are more people that if they don't have the opportunity to go hunting, they may not have a full freezer.
Mm-hmm.
And they may have, you know, difficulties feeding their family. And since I've been up here, funny enough, I've actually had more interaction with different groups and spoken at a lot of different events about this. And I think part of it is because I do have a little more time to be able to do it. But also it's because it's kind of started taking a global effect. John Dietrich did an amazing layout in the State Journal that he was actually nominated for, and I believe won a national news award in regards to this entire session that he put together about Wisconsin under the gun.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you get the chance to look it up, amazing.
Oh yeah,
you know, set of arguments.
I would not have been introduced to you or not for John Dietrich. And you know, we see so much anti-gun reporting that when you see something that truly is fair, and I think objective, when it comes to reporting on gun owners, gun ownership, and these issues, it really stands out. And so yeah, I've been very pleased to have John on the program on multiple occasions. I think he is really doing incredible work at. And again, you know, just covering this issue fairly, right? And it's not about so much of the time when you see reporters write or do a news package on you know, these issues, it starts with the premise that, well, we need more gun control, right? And John didn't start with that premise. He didn't finish with that premise, right? He really was exploring, okay, well, what are gun owners doing? What, in fact, I think informing his audience that, hey, you know what? Gun owners are concerned about these things too. It's just that they don't believe that we can ban our way to safety. They don't believe that things like, you know, universal background checks or gun-free zones are effective at preventing violence. But it doesn't mean they don't care. In fact, you know, I would say, Chuck, I mean, you're an example of somebody who cares very much. And absolutely. Not just about what happens to your consumers and your customers, but you care about the people in your community. And I think that's the vast majority of gun owners across the country feel that same way.
Well, and we were lucky enough to have the Captain John D. Mason Suicide Prevention Program out of the Milwaukee VA really take up the flag on this. And they've got an amazing website now called BeThereWis.org. And it's an awesome website because it gives you information on safe storage measures, suicide prevention techniques, and it gives you an interactive map where there's over 40 different shops in the state now that offer safe storage. And that's just in the last 5 years.
That's fantastic. And honestly, I mean, I live in Virginia and we don't really have anything like that. And, you know, this was something I started thinking about several months ago when my wife started really getting sick, you know, because I didn't know how I would react when she passed away. And I was very much open to the idea of, OK, if I think that I need to take my gun somewhere else because either I'm worried about myself or I'm worried about my kids who still live at home, I started talking to friends. And, you know, thankfully, I've got a lot of friends who are collectors. They've got some safes and, you know, they were more than willing to store my guns with them if need be. And I have not felt the need to do that, but I am very much aware. And I am constantly asking myself, and I'm constantly looking at my kids, and I'm talking to my kids, and I'm, you know, kind of gauging where they are with grief. And if I ever felt like, okay, this is something that I need to do, I wouldn't hesitate to do it. But not everybody has that friend circle, right? Not everybody has that person they can go to. And that's why programs like what you're doing are so critically important. Because what happens if you're a gun owner and you're surrounded by friends who don't own guns, who don't have safes? Maybe your family members don't really like the fact that you own guns, right? So you can feel even more alone and isolated in those situations.
Well, and let's be honest, the stigma of someone who may be in a potential crisis time, people don't like to publicly declare it. And now they're much more open to it now than they were even 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. But to publicly declare that you're having an issue, you know, for a lot of gun owners, when you do the background check, there is a question on there if you've ever been mentally adjudicated and had to turn in your firearms due to a mental health issue. And if you answer yes to that question, technically, you are not able to buy the firearm.
Right. Yeah.
You're prohibited. And, you know, that's where, when they talk about public safety measures, you know, you asked if they had reached out at all to me about this. And no, they didn't. I've heard nothing but crickets. And again, I'm, like you said, I'm very passionate about this. I've had veterans that are friends of mine that have completed suicide, and I've had, you know, family members and friends that have as well. And it's a very passionate topic for me to go on, because there are always signs. And, you know, I commend you, first of all, for having the mental fortitude to realize that you might not be okay, or your kids might not be okay, and realizing that it's okay to not be okay.
Yeah.
And it's okay to reach out to your friends. And a majority, you know, let's be honest, men, we don't talk about feelings real well.
Right.
But when you've got friends that you know you can rely on and say, hey, I'm not in a very good place. Can I store these over at your house for, you know, 6 months or 3 months or whatever until I'm in a better place? I don't know a single gun owner friend of mine that would look at me and say, well, no, I don't want to be part of that.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and yeah. The relief that we've gotten from some people when they find out we offer the program, not even if they use it,
mm-hmm.
but if they find out that we offer the program and they say, well, I don't really want to share my personal information. All I need is your name and address for my logbook. It's none of my business what you're going through right now. I don't need to know if it's you that's having the potential crisis, your significant other, or one of your children. Or maybe it's a family member that's coming to stay with you because they're having difficulties. That's none of my business. And I think that's where people get concerned, is they're worried that, you know, people that will take these firearms in to store them may spread their business across town. And that's the one thing that's been really great. And, you know, down at the VA, they did a great introduction to this as well, saying, you know, it doesn't matter why. It just matters that we help limit that access until they're in the place they need to be.
Absolutely.
And it's a voluntary program. I mean, if they come back 2 days later and say, I've changed my mind, I'd like them back, I'm not going to sit there and argue with them. That's not my place.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we got so many of the smaller shops in the state that started looking at that going, yeah, I like this idea.
Well, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why it is so valuable, because it is voluntary, right? And, you know, I mean, you look at things like red flag laws. I'm not a fan of ERPO laws. I think that they take the guns away, but they don't deal with the underlying issue that might make somebody a dangerous person to themselves or others. There's typically no mental health treatment offered. And again, it's not voluntary, right? So there is a stigma attached, I think, in a way that doesn't happen when we're talking about voluntary storage. And I think a big part of this is, you know, you talk about
specifically male gun owners and men in general. You know, I think the stereotype is not true for everybody, but I think it's true for a lot of folks, right? We don't really like to talk about our feelings. We don't really want to be all touchy feely. And, you know, that's part of this component, too. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I have been open about talking with people. And I will say, Chuck, I mean, it's been I'm not going to name names, but I've had some, you know, big burly special operators say, hey, man, I love you over the past couple of weeks. I've had people who you would not expect to hear, you know, tell another man, hey, I love you and I'm here for you. Anything I can do, you let me know. And that has mattered. It really does make a difference. And so one of the things that, you know, along with what you're doing, one of the things I hope that we can do as gun owners and as Second Amendment advocates is also, again, you know, let people know it's okay to be a support system. It's okay to reach out. It's okay to say to somebody who you're friends with, or even somebody that you're not that friends with, you know, I care about you, and know that you are cared about and know that you are cared for. Because we are a community at the heart of what we do. And, you know, there is this tie that binds us all together. And I think it is that that love of shooting, whether it's competitive shooting, whether it's hunting, whether it's recreational shooting, the respect that we have for our right to keep and bear arms. There are some commonalities that can, you know, bridge a lot of divides. And so when we are open, again, to establishing those bonds, and to creating that community, or at least embracing that community, and then I think we can look out for each other. And I think that that's really, really important these days. So, Chuck, unfortunately, listen, we're going to run out of time here. I've got only just a couple of minutes left on my free Zoom meeting.
Understand.
But I really appreciate everything you're doing. I appreciate you reaching out and joining me on the show today. And I hope that we can have you back in the future. If there are FFLs out there, either in Wisconsin or outside of the state, who want to know more, can they reach out to you? What's the best place to turn to if they want more information about, you know, voluntary storage programs, like what's going on in Wisconsin?
So the VA's website is betherewisconsin.org. And it's right. The words be there, BETHEREWIS.org. That's a great informational site for right within the state of Wisconsin. It's good for people outside of Wisconsin as far as informational, and it provides, you know, you could download copies of, you know, a contract agreement, how to set it up, different things like that. But, you know, people, if they ever want to reach out to us, they can reach out to us through our website, essentialshootingsupplies.com. You can hit the contact us. They can find us on Facebook. We're also on Instagram. I mean, we do the social media aspect as much as we can. And you know, we try to keep people updated with what we're doing and posting things, but, you know, it's kind of a fight with the social media platforms to, you know, maintain a presence.
Yep.
So, but otherwise, you know, look us up on the website, Essential Shooting Supplies.
All right.
We pop up right on the web, right on Google, and they can even just send us a message or give us a phone call. I'm always willing to provide people information or advice. And, you know, that's the biggest thing here is together we're going to make it better.
Absolutely.
And you can't do it on your own. So again, Happy New Year, my friend. And please, anytime you need any input, please feel free to reach out.
I definitely will be doing that. We're going to have you on again in the very near future. Chuck, again, thank you for everything you're doing. Stay warm up there in the northern Wisconsin. All right, my friend?
I will try. Thanks, Cam.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. My thanks to Chuck for coming on the program. Looking forward to having him back again in the future. And, you know, before we get to our good deed of the day and our recidivist report and our armed citizen story, you know, I will say that I'll just give a little tip, and I don't know if this will work for everybody, but it has worked for me, and it's something that I learned years ago. I would say within the first year or two of Missy's initial diagnosis, when she was, you know, going through chemo for the first couple of times, she was losing her hair, she felt like crap, couldn't get out of bed for weeks at a time. I learned then that when there's a lot of big, heavy stuff going on in your life, it helps to look for those small blessings, because sometimes the big ones are hard to find, right? But if you can look for something small, and it can be as small as, man, that's a beautiful sunrise, which is actually what I thought this morning when I woke up at 5 o'clock for some reason and couldn't go back to bed. At least I was up to see the sunrise. And it was a beautiful sunrise. And I took in the time to appreciate that. The other small blessing I had today, I found out that the Amish grocery store right across the street from where I live has the best sausage and gravy biscuits that I have had since I left Oklahoma. Well, with the exception of Missy's. Those were hard to top. But so the second best that I've had since I left Oklahoma. That, again, not a huge thing in the grand scheme of things. But when you're looking for those small blessings, you can find them. And again, I think that it is when you start looking for those small blessings, again, even when you got heavy stuff going on in your life, at least in my case, it makes the burden a little bit easier. So there you go. There's Cam's tip of the day. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Wisconsin, as I mentioned earlier. Here's the headline: Waukesha drive-by shooting, man sentenced to probation. Yeah. Weird. And I don't think Governor Evers is going to be talking much about this case, but one of two men convicted in a 2023 Waukesha drive-by shooting was sentenced this week to 5 years of probation. 26-year-old Rashawn Williams pleaded no contest last month to attempted first-degree intentional homicide, and then an additional charge was dismissed, endangering safety by reckless use of a firearm. Now, according to, I think this is Fox 6 in Milwaukee, according to Fox 6, the court initially sentenced Williams to 3 years in prison and 5 years probation. I mean, that's still, as far as I'm concerned, a slap on the wrist for attempted homicide. But it gets even worse because the judge who sentenced Williams to 3 years in prison and 5 years of probation stayed the prison sentence entirely and told Williams, you're on 5 years probation. So no prison time whatsoever for attempted first-degree intentional homicide, attempted murder. Straight probation. Williams' accomplice, Alan Tronco, both charged in this case. Tronco was sentenced in May of last year to 10 years in prison and 8 years of extended supervision. He was found guilty of attempted first-degree intentional homicide in possession of a firearm by a felon. Again, he did not take a plea deal. He was convicted by a jury of his peers. Williams did take the plea deal and again gets a slap on the wrist. In this drive-by shooting, at least one individual was shot. It was a graze wound to a leg. It apparently started at a house party in Waukesha. Tronco and another man started arguing. Argument spilled outside the apartment building. There was punches thrown. Tronco then got into Williams' Jeep and drove after the other guy. Court Commissioner David Herring said that Tronco's response, according to the complaint, was to get with his friend, grab the firearm out of the glove compartment, start shooting at the car to the point that the other person was hit. And again, he was sentenced to 10 years in prison, which with, you know, good behavior, time spent behind bars, awaiting trial, probably be out in five. But better than what his accomplice received. Again, nothing more than probation for attempted first degree murder. Now, today's Armed Citizen story, you know, kind of a tragic one. Cecil County, Maryland, where prosecutors say no charge will be filed after a man was killed by his father during a home invasion attempt. Now, this wasn't a case of mistaken identity or anything. This was actually the son going after his parents and the dad, in fear of his life and afraid for his wife's life, forced to shoot his own son in self-defense. It was September of last year. Joe Berry Jr. was shot and killed amidst what police were calling an ongoing dispute between him and his elderly parents. State police troopers were called out about 2 o'clock in the afternoon on that September day to check on a reported shooting. They found Berry outside suffering from multiple gunshot wounds inside the home. They found Berry's 80-year-old father, who declined medical treatment, as well as a 78-year-old woman believed to be his mom, who had to be taken by ambulance to a local hospital for treatment of injuries that were not from gunfire. According to authorities, the preliminary investigation determined that the assailant and his dad had gotten into an argument, and Mr. Berry tried to break into his parents' home before his dad retrieved a firearm and shot him. This week, the Cecil County State Attorney's Office announced that they would not be prosecuting the shooting, saying that the gunshot wound to Barry's torso resulted in his death, but was a justified use of force because Barry's father, again, was in fear for his life. Officials in Cecil County said, in these circumstances, the suspect was protecting himself and his wife and was acting in self-defense. And again, it is tragic that it came to that. But I suppose the alternative would be even worse, right? A father forced to shoot his son in self-defense versus a son perhaps murdering his parents in the heat of an argument. Finally, today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time will enable to do the right thing. A good Samaritan in Winter Park, Florida, who alerted first responders to a truck that had become submerged with a man still inside. And thankfully, because that good Samaritan acted so quickly, that 80-year-old was saved. The Winter Park Police Department said that Nate Camacho, the good Samaritan in question, helped to save the man's life. Temperatures in the low 40s this morning. The police said his actions provided responders with the valuable minutes to free the driver from the water. When the Winter Park Police Department responded to this scene, apparently Camacho flagged down an officer around 5:40 in the morning and said, hey, there's a truck that went into a pond over here. Officers found this 80-year-old inside the truck, appeared disoriented. They said that they made efforts to try to free the man. While beginning to secure the vehicle, they gained access to the driver by using a tool to break the window. He was eventually removed from the vehicle, taken to the hospital to be treated for non-life-threatening injuries. It is thought that the 80-year-old might have suffered a medical emergency that caused him to lose control of his vehicle. That's why it ended up in the water. And again, if it weren't for the quick thinking and fast actions of Nate Camacho to alert those responding officers, that medical emergency might have cost that 80-year-old his life. But instead, he was extricated from the water, taken to a local hospital, and at last report, looks like he is going to be okay. So in the right place, at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. Nate Camacho there in Winter Park, Florida, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, listen, that's going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. In fact, that's going to do it for this week's Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. We'll be back with another show on Monday, but don't forget to check out BearingArms.com. Throughout the rest of today, Friday, and the weekend, we're going to keep you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. We also, by the way, have a fantastic sale going on right now in celebration of Donald Trump's inauguration. 74% off your VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum membership when you use the promo code POTUS47. Take advantage of that. You'll get exclusive stories not only from Bearing Arms, but if you're a VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member, from across the Town Hall Media websites. All kinds of other great benefits. Too many to name right now, but check it out. And again, use the promo code POTUS47 for a 74% savings on your membership. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you back here on Monday. Until then, be well, be safe, be free, and make stuff.